Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Market Outlook conference call. Lines will be muted until the end of the call, where we will accept questions. And to ask permission to speak, you're going to hit the 5 and star. So again, 5 star to ask a question, and we'll unmute you to speak and ask a question. Again, if anybody joined later on, we do have slides that accompany the presentation today. So if you can, log into Valarc.com and click on the banner for this conference call. And Charles, take it away.
Hi, thanks, Emily. Good morning or good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining our Market Outlook conference call today. I know a lot of people are genuinely concerned about the volatility that we've seen in the market recently, and so I'm grateful that we have Brad Pineau, Vice President at Fidelity, to help us understand some of the metrics and things that are going on. If you've attended our market outlooks or client dinners in the past, you'll know I say often that we've made and protected more money with research from Fidelity Investments than from any other source out there. We really believe that Fidelity does a phenomenal job of researching what's going on metrics that are just really astonishing. And Brad's job at Fidelity is to take all that crazy amounts of information and convert it into I guess the words and language that we all can understand and benefit from. So I'm going to welcome Brad to our call today. Brad, are you with us, sir?
Yes, I am, Charles. Thanks again.
Thanks to you also for joining us. So, Brad, I'll let you take it away, and we're also excited to see that the market's been behaving a little bit better over the last couple of days. Brad, what are your thoughts on what's going on out there?
Well, you know, I put a call in just for this call to have a little bit of green in the screen. And as I said, happy to be here. And this has been an interesting year, to say the least. And you know, I would say, really, it's been an interesting post-8 years, post-great financial crisis. And we're certainly not going to walk ourselves all the way back to 2008, 2009. But I appreciate the fact that you mentioned that word volatility in your opening comments, Charles, because as you think about 2017, right, so just last year, it was a year for the books, right? We had this global synchronized recovery is how we define 2017, and I know you've been talking about that with your clients, and last year was a good year for equities, domestic, international. It was a good year for fixed income. Across the board, it was a really banner year, and 2018's been somewhat of a different story. And the real question that I would say investors probably have in their minds, and as they should, is with this most recent volatility, is this the sign of more ominous things to come, meaning a recession perhaps on the horizon, or even a greater downturn, maybe even another 2008? I've heard lots of investors say that. And I would say no, no, and no. And therefore, the argument we would have is that going forward, this could present a fantastic buying opportunity. And I'll walk you through that, and I'll certainly walk the folks on the phone that and how we see that. And so let's just think about 2018, right? So obviously we had a phenomenal January, kind of on the backs of the tax plan that was signed into law last December, hard to believe, but almost a full 12 months ago. And January was a really record-breaking January in a number of ways. And then February was just the opposite. We saw this market drop basically almost 10% in 9 short days in early February. And the biggest reason for that, there's a lot of things that were going on, but to keep it simple, the greatest negative catalyst that we saw on February 5th, to be specific, was this inflation print, right? So we saw average hourly earnings, which in simple terms is just wage inflation, which we get every first Friday of every month. It came in at a 2.9%. And that was seen as maybe a sign that the central bank, the Federal Reserve here in this country, was going to have to tighten their monetary policy, tighten financial conditions, even more so than they have been. And that's been a real source of risk. At least the perception is that if the Fed tightens because the economy is overheating, and I think we all know that the Federal Reserve and Jerome Powell, the current Fed president, has a dual mandate. They wear two hats at the Fed. One is for full employment, which we certainly have, right, a 50-year low on the unemployment rate, so there's no issues there. The second mandate is to ensure that inflation doesn't get ahead of itself, to ensure that the economy doesn't overheat. And that's their second objective. And, of course, as you tighten monetary policy, we all know that that siphons money and liquidity out of the economy, and it just tightens up the economy, and therefore it really prevents or mitigates an overheating economy. And that's how the economic academic books would suggest it. So on that February 5th, it appeared as if inflation, and by the way, that was a seven-year high in that inflation number, so it wasn't just some arbitrary 2.9, but that certainly created this fear that the market had run too hot. And sure enough, we saw this, you know, I would say, really almost felt like a crash. That's how quickly it was. And then if you just kind of fast forward throughout the spring, this whole idea of trade, right, so tariffs and trade, that surfaced in late February, and it really percolated, I would argue, well, it's obviously percolated all the way until today, but the last several weeks and couple of months, it's almost feeling like a full boil on the on the hot plate, if you will, and we'll talk about that. But trade became another issue, and the market exhibited even more volatility in the spring. And then what we saw in the summer was something unusual. You know, we were in the midst of a midterm election this year too, of a president's first term, is always an interesting year because midterm elections, and I'm going to talk about this more here in a moment, but midterm elections typically evoke uncertainty and, of course, volatility of its own right. But here we were in this midterm election where typically the summer of a midterm election year is usually, I would argue, sideways to down because of that brewing uncertainty in the midterm. And if you go back, really, the last 17 midterms, all the way back to 1946, that's exactly what we've seen here, where we've seen kind of a volatile summer. Well, this year, we didn't see necessarily a volatile summer. We actually had a really good summer from an equity price perspective. And I would argue the reason for that was Larry Kudlow, right? So the Kudlow effect, and if that name doesn't ring a bell to you, although I'm sure it does for most of you, he is now the economic advisor for President Trump. And he suggested to President Trump to ring fence these three different trade deals that the president was looking to accomplish. Number one, with Europe. Number two, the new NAFTA. And number three, with China. They did ring fence all three, and it seems as if they've had some real positive accomplishments with Europe and this new NAFTA 2.0. Now, there's some noise around these, but for the most part, it seems as if the negotiations have been successful. And, of course, just recently, just 36 hours ago, it does appear that at least we have a framework for a Chinese-U.S. deal around trade. And I'll talk more about that because that's interesting, and it's obviously right off the presses. We have a lot of info to share. But that certainly helped the summer performance. And now let's just fast forward. We had the midterm, and, you know, I would say just leading up to the midterm, October is typically kind of a wild card month of any midterm election year. It's either really good, as it appears maybe the Democrats or the Republicans are going to, you know, take over one particular faction of Congress. And I still think people didn't know that the House was going to go blue, although that's what the betting odds were telling us, and the Senate was going to remain red. But nonetheless, you just don't know. But one thing that was interesting is thinking about what was the epicenter of this volatility these last six, seven, 8 weeks, really 2 months. And it was Jerome Powell talking on October 3rd about how this neutral rate, right, so the actual speedometer, if you will, as to what the Fed could do in terms of tightening, Jerome Powell, he conveyed some hawkish sentiment, which is otherwise known as he basically suggested that he's not exactly sure how long it will take to get to the neutral rate, but that we are well under it, meaning we still have tightening to go. It's almost as if you're on a road trip and your kids ask you, you know, how much longer, and even if you know it's a 500-mile, distance to your destination, that's what Jerome Powell mentioned, is that we still have some hikes ahead of us. The market did not receive that very positively. In fact, I would argue they kind of overshot it on the downside, but still, that created a tremendous amount of volatility. And then just 24 short hours later, on October 4th, Vice President Michael Pence came out and talked about that he doesn't necessarily think this trade situation with China is a trade war, but more like a Cold War. Well, I don't think anyone needs to know that a Cold War typically evokes, as we know, this whole Cold War with the Soviet Union, a 30-40 year malaise, right? And that certainly would not be a good thing for the overall global economy, nor would it be a good thing for our stock investments. So the perception was that Jerome Powell was going to keep tightening without putting the brakes on, right? So this hawkish sentiment. And at this very same time, contemporaneously, the sentiment was that we're going to witness an economic slowdown because it seems as if we're going to win at all costs if we have to when it comes to trade. Now, that really caused October and November to be, well, as we know, challenging months for our stock investments. And then just over the past week, and I know Charles and I, as we were prepping for today's call, we were talking about last Wednesday's stock performance. And sure enough, we had one of the best days we've had all year in the stock market. And I think a lot of you realize why that was. The big reason for that was Jerome Powell, the Fed governor, had a noontime press conference. And you can't make this stuff up, really, when you kind of look through this. He actually mentioned that there's a good chance we may be just below, and I quote, unquote, just below the neutral rate. So in 7 short weeks, he moves from well below to just below. So, you know, he got the memo, right, that, you know, maybe we don't need to be in such a rush, right, and there actually are lots of volatility out there, and interest rates need not move exceptionally higher because, again, back to my earlier comment, if the Fed is data-dependent on that dual mandate, the inflationary data would suggest that the Fed need not tighten as quickly as maybe they expressed earlier because the inflationary data is lukewarm at best. So even though we're having a growing economy and things are good to be certain, we do not believe that the Fed should be in such a rush. And Vice Chair Richard Clarida has also expressed that same sentiment, I would argue even much more loudly than Jerome Powell. So in tandem, they're working together with the FOMC governors to be a bit more, let's just say, dovish. Very good chance they're going to tighten here in the next couple of weeks. I would fully expect it, but you maybe should expect a pause in 2019. So check one, right? We have that, and that's really helped alleviate a source of anxiety for investors, and of course last Wednesday was the reflection of that. And now we have the trade situation. You know, at Fidelity, we've been talking about 4 scenarios for trade. And, of course, a lot of this is all hypothetical work, but we do a lot of work just given the fact that it's been such a headwind, at least a perceptive headwind. It really hasn't affected much of the fundamentals. So I want to make a line of distinction there that it's not as if this is actually hurting companies, but it is brewing more and more uncertainty. And, of course, that's never a good thing. So what we saw on Saturday night, and I'm sure, again, a lot of you read this, but if you haven't, I'll just bring you up to speed. You know, the 4 scenarios that China and the U.S. could have brought forth would have been, number one, just to have some type of framework, right, a framework, a pathway forward for what trade negotiations could look like. You know, in essence, that would have meant that the trade, or I should say the tariff rate, still would have moved from 10% to 25% come January 1, as the U.S. has alluded to and for a number of months. And that would not be a good thing for the market, but I would argue the market's already reflecting that, right? They're already pricing in this 25% tariff rate. And, of course, number one would have just been some more clarity, more transparency around what can we do here, what do negotiations look like going forward. Second option was a ceasefire, and ultimately that's what we got. Now, the ceasefire keeps the 10% tariff rate in place today, and it does not bring in the 25% rate. So that's off the, you know, I would say off the negotiation table for now. It does give a 90-day window up until really April 1st of 19 to have some type of resolution. At the same time, it's going to add some more clarity and transparency as to the economic groups that get together here to figure it out. And you're already starting to see this, right? The Wall Street Journal had an article today about how the Chinese were going to eliminate tariffs of 40% on all automobiles sourced from the United States, as well as automobiles sourced from Europe and other parts of the world. That would be huge if that happens. Now, no one can confirm it yet, but you know, should you see that happen, I would argue that's a major win for this administration. And then the other two options, really, number three is something you're starting to see some green shoots of, and that's where the president actually wins, and the Chinese do reduce tariffs on a number of different areas, for example, autos. As you probably know, China has the highest global tariff rate at 9.8%. I should say it's the second highest behind South Korea, but still, that enforces that their economy remains a closed economy. And this president, as well as other presidents and other economic advisors from other nations, would like to see that 10% rate brought down to allow more products, goods, and services sold into mainland China. It's more of a wish list item, but I can tell you, should that happen, again, that should be perceived as a major win for this administration, and the market should rejoice. And then the fourth option, it's real simple. It would have been failure where nothing came out of this negotiation. That wasn't a 0% weight in our scenario analysis, but it was probably more 5 to 10%, but you couldn't rule it out 100%. And happy to say that we don't have that today. So this should be good. The market being up today, I would argue, should be a sign of things to come. I want to transition here just for the next, 3 to 4 minutes, just to suggest that we do not necessarily need a dovish Fed, right, or a Fed that's going to be a bit more slow to react to monetary policy, and we don't need some absolute trade deal to see earnings, right, the actual fundamentals in our market improve. You know, arguably, and I always make that distinction with financial advisors when I meet with them and their investors, because ultimately it's as if people are treating the stock market that we need to have these negative headwinds go away for earnings to do better. Because this is how I see it, and this is how we see it. Earnings are doing just fine. Right, and at Fidelity, we've been around for 7+ decades, and I've been doing this for 20-some years. And by my lights, we've always suggested that stock prices will follow the earnings, right? Real simply, stock prices follow those earnings, and that's what analysts get paid to do. And even if you're an individual investor, and obviously with Charles and his team, that's what they do, is to figure out what the earnings look like, and if earnings are going to be greater, well, the stock price should, reflect that. That fundamental growth. And if you just think about where earnings are probably going to shake out to this year, the S&P earnings are probably going to get to about a 165 by the time it's all said and done. $165 per share for the S&P 500. Now, that sounds like some arbitrary number. If you compare that $165 to last year was at $132. So you're talking about a $33 increase, right? So call it 23, 24, almost 25% year-over-year increase. In the 3 years prior, even more interesting is in 2016, 15, and 14, you had flat earnings of $118 per year. So it's not as if this is just, ho-hum earnings. This has been an earnings recovery like we haven't seen really in the history of the market, or at least over the last 20 years. And we just bring that up because the earnings are not being reflected in the stock market today. It's as if investors, one, aware of it, or two, don't care because they think that next year is going to get so ominous and so ugly. People ask me all the time, when's the recession come? Well, I can tell you when the recession doesn't come. We believe a recession doesn't happen until 2021 at the earliest. And it's not just because we feel optimistic and happy. It's because earnings are just too good to see this economy start to slow down. Consumers are gainfully employed. They're making more money. Oil's cheaper, and I'll take that. And they're spending more money. 70% of our GDP is consumption. And we don't believe that consumers are going to slow down anytime soon. We also believe earnings next year could be even much greater than they are this year, about a $175 number on the S&P. And then the last thing I'll say, and you've probably seen this before, and this is in one of the slides. It's actually the first slide on the deck if you happen to look at it. It's the midterm election. I kind of spoke to it earlier, and I'll close on this. A typical midterm election year, as I mentioned, is that sideways to down market leading up to an election. And if you've seen this illustration, it's slide number 2. It shows you that the blue line goes completely northeast, right? It goes completely up and to the right just after the midterm. And people always ask, Well, tell me more about that. Well, I'll give you a few statistics. Since that 1946 time frame, so here we are 70-plus years, right, 17 midterm elections, the stock market, the S&P 500, has never been negative in the 12 months after a midterm election. So not once has it been negative. And on average, it's up 15% after that midterm election. And I'm talking about the next 12 months. So really, you could say the next 14 months between midterm and the end of the following year, which, of course, would be year three of a president's first term. Year three has always been, at least on average, the best year of a president's, the best year from a stock market perspective for a four-year presidential cycle. So there's a real strong tailwind here. And the simple reason why that data exists, at least historically, and it provides a very nice compass point for the next 12, 15 months, is because no longer are we in a midterm election year, but we are now at the beginning of a general election. Meaning, if Donald Trump is as much of a negotiator as he self-professes to be, and less of an ideologue, who even if you can't stand this person, I think you'd all agree that he's not about his ideals. If that's the case, if he wants to prime the pump and get economic growth to remain robust, at least by early 2020, because that's when voters typically make up their mind, that kind of April-May timeframe just before the general election, if he wants to do that, this trade situation could be that real positive catalyst. And back to the fact that a recession would be hard to come by, he's not the only one that's up for election come 2020. Nearly three-quarters of Congress, the men and women of Congress, are also up for re-election in 2020. So you'd be hard-pressed to see so many political constituents, if you will, giving away the farm, as we know they like to do, and see economic growth contract so meaningfully. Now, 2021 could be a different story, although I'd argue the economy should still be doing fine by then. But you get the point. Next year is not the year to be short. It's not the year to take chips off the table. Certainly, I know Charles and team have been working with you to be cognizant of your asset allocation and prudent risk-taking. No one's going to back the truck up here in this environment. But certainly, this is the time to just be looking towards the fundamentals and understanding that these two negative catalysts of Fed policy and trade could certainly be alleviating here right before our own very eyes, and we should see some more green in the screen, at least over the next several months. So, Charles, I'll stop there. Hopefully I've elicited a few questions or comments, and we could take it away from there.
Thanks, Brad. I appreciate it. We'll open up the line for comments in just a moment here. A lot of our clients really get kind of nervous about the fact that we're seeing some level of volatility and downturn, and I wonder if you could just address one quick point, and that is that we've seen a monster rally since 2008 up until today, really the longest bull market, I think, in the history of mankind. And there's always that thought of where is the other shoe? And if I'm hearing you correctly, and I think I agree, we don't think there's another shoe out there today. Would you say that's safe to say?
Yes, I would. And I think the question's also begging the answer of, can we get something like a 2007, 2008, one, two, because this has been an exceptionally long rally, long rallies don't continue to last forever. So it kind of begs the idea that it just needs to roll over. And then all I'd say there is, 2008 was a 100-year flood. Certainly nothing's impossible, but the makings of that recession and that downdraft, the markings of it have nothing to do with right now, right? There's almost no over-leverage at that level like we saw. And number two, just because this market's done so well, let us not forget why it's done so well. And a lot of that was because of the Fed and the munificence and the generosity that they brought forth, i.e. all that quantitative easing, right? I mean, they flooded the market with cash, and people really took advantage, as well as CFOs and executives at companies. They bought back a lot of their stock, and their multiples did well, and their stock prices followed suit. That's all well and good. Obviously now, we don't necessarily have that environment, right? The Fed may not be tightening very quickly, but they're certainly not loosening anymore. I mean, that's certainly true. So therefore, this is when active management and the value of a financial advisor should become so much more important, right, and so much more, I would say, front and center, because there are going to be some winners and losers. You know, more volatility is probably going to be expected rather than what we saw these last 7 or 8 years, and therefore you need somebody to, you know, provide that that tour experience as opposed to doing it yourself. So,
great, thank you. So we always like to kind of finalize these calls with what are the recommendations, and as challenging and sometimes as it may be for some folks, we just kind of got to bite our tongue, I think, and stay the course. We do think this is a stay the course scenario. And we do continue to use our strategy of positioning, which is to try and identify some of the strongest markets and industries out there. And I like to joke, you know, that Elon Musk is sending us all to Mars, we're curing cancer, and we're going to be testing flying cars next year. But all of that is true. And so we're really heavy on science and technology, info and communications. We think biotech and healthcare is still some good stuff. Brad, any other categories you think you might want to throw on that list, or are we on the right spot?
No, you're on the right spot. I completely echo everything you've just said. I mean, just thinking about healthcare, and I don't know what your weightings are there, although you did mention it favorably, so I'm not, you know, speaking out of turn. You know, a lot of people talk about these midterms as, well, it doesn't really matter. You know, once they're done, the market just kind of does its thing. And that's true. But if you had to look at a clear winner for the midterms and a sector or an industry, it would be healthcare. You know, the fact that the Democrats now have some leadership, the Affordable Care Act stays intact. That's important. The fact that the Republicans maintain leadership in the Senate means that we're not going to see some drug price policy reforms anytime soon. So, you know, when you have a split Congress, healthcare typically sings big, big-time praises. The only other sector I'd mention, and we'll see, maybe it's a bit early here, although, boy, I mean, you know, all my years of study would suggest that this sector should blossom, and that would be industrials, right? Construction, engineering, transportation, industrial machinery, you know, anything that people use to be industrious, if you will. You know, if this trade situation kind of gets back on the back burner, or dare I even say, just go away, industrials is going to rip like we haven't seen in a very long time. Very pro-cyclical, obviously, a little bit more mainstream than some of the science and tech, but industrials is something we're looking at towards 2019.
Fantastic. Thank you, Brad. We're going to open up the lines for questions. Now, if you do have a question, please press 5-star on your phone, 5-star, please, and that will light up on our operator's board and will unmute your line. So once again, 5-star if you have questions for Brad, please. And there we go.
Hi, this is Al, Al Ballard.
Oh, hey, Al.
Hello, Charles. Hello, Brad.
How are you, Al?
A question about the tech stocks and how they reacted to what we just went through with the correction that just took place the last couple weeks. And, you know, I'm strong in tech, but certainly there's a lot of volatility, as you mentioned. And also I wonder about some of the recent comments with, you know, the Facebook and other stocks where they need to be, you know, controlled a little better as well in some areas, but I'm just curious as your opinions as far as where it's going and if it still continues to be an area that we should stay strong on.
It's a great question, Al, and one I get very often. So a few observations. Number one, you brought it up, you actually brought it up, is this whole risk around additional regulation for some of these big tech companies, right? So whether it's Google, whether it's Facebook, even Amazon, which is more of a discretionary name, right? I mean, but they're still certainly a technology-oriented company, or even Apple. You know, some of these fangy-type names, you know, there's a risk that the government is going to get a bit more cautious regarding how these companies operate. And perhaps they should, right? They are becoming much larger, and they're really, if you will, altering the way society basically works, lives, communicates. And with that being said, I do know the president has just recently invited the executives of all the big tech companies, very much like he did just after his election in early 2017, which I got to tell you is such a fascinating photo to see him in a room with Jeff Bezos and Tim Cook and, you know, all the heads of these tech companies. I'm always fascinated by that. But with that being said, that just brews uncertainty. I'd like to think that cooler heads prevail, and even if there are some regulations here, they will be fluid and they should be marginal. And I think the market just kind of overreacted that Facebook's never going to generate another dime again, right? Or Apple's not going to sell an iPhone. You know, these companies are, you know, I would say prevalent in the market for a good reason, right? They have phenomenal products and their brand and their adoption is second to none. Now, of course, we've seen these companies, you know, decade by decade, and no one says that these companies will be around for 100 years. But at the same time, we think it was a bit overdone on the sell-off. The number two thing I'll just say to you is trade. If the trade situation gets uglier and uglier and we just have no resolution, and we get more and more tariffs. The challenge there is technology. A lot of these companies, especially the semiconductor names, they get anywhere from 40 to 70% of their revenue from China, right? So we actually have seen this over really the whole year, but it really brewed in October and November. I mean, semiconductors have been on fire for the past 4 years. They had their worst 6 weeks ever, you know, I would say outside of maybe 2000, the last 6 weeks. And a big reason for that is they just thought that, you know, the market thought, the investors thought that this trade situation was going to prevent companies like Intel, companies like Broadcom, right, any of these firms, NVIDIA, which has been a real hot stock, from generating sales growth that, like they used to. And, of course, you know, there's a risk of that. It's not 0%, but it's certainly not as much as people were reacting to it. And you can see that today, right? A lot of these stocks are up really big today on the screen. And then last thought is technology was the last to fall, right? Always the case, very classic setup, because they were the best sector, right, for the past two straight years, they were the last to fall. But I'd argue because of that, they are cheap, and that might mean that this downdraft is all but washed out, because typically when the best sector falls apart as well, that means nothing's left to, you know, basically there's no, nothing's immune. And now that we've seen that, we could actually see a decent rally. So the fundamentals are real. I think that you have some tech there. Makes a lot of sense. I certainly do as well. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about what you saw the last 6 weeks. It should not be indicative of the next six.
Okay, I guess we'll go ahead and wrap up. Brad, thank you so much for your time today. I really do appreciate it.
Welcome. Anytime, and Charles. Certainly. Thanks for the partnership, as always. Ladies and gentlemen, happy holidays.
Thank you. And folks, I know we didn't go through the slides too much today, but I really wanted to encourage you to take a look at those slides. They really are self-explanatory, and it does talk a lot about and reinforce some of the trends that Brad has described. And if you have a moment, I'd encourage you to flip through those. So let's go one last time for any questions that are out there. Five star, please. Nothing there. So thanks again, Brad. Appreciate it. And that concludes our call for today. Thank you all for joining. Bye-bye.